Hey everybody, it's John. Welcome back to another episode of Talk to Me in the Car, a podcast about all things teaching related and education inspired that I literally record right here in my vehicle on my drive back from work as a high school instructional coach in Washington, D.C. Bad traffic is a good time for a brain dump, so we get about 11 minutes each week, give or take, where we just talk about an idea that's either on Twitter, on blogs, in education books, or in the classroom, and they're practical ideas, bite-sized, on purpose, that we can take and put in our classroom really quickly. So, today we're talking all about clearing the lists, what that looks like as we start a brand new school year. If you are in a school where your kids are back, congratulations. If you're in a school where your teachers are back, I feel your pain and I feel your excitement. And if you're one of those places where it's both of those things or neither of those things yet, it's coming, right? So let's all talk about this back to school time. And clearing the lists is a big part of it. It's been a trend on the internet this week and for the past couple weeks. So let's talk about that. Before we get into that, though, first, some housekeeping notes. If you like what you're hearing, hit that subscribe button on your favorite podcasting app. It helps people find the show. Or feel free to subscribe. It helps me, know that people are listening out there. Likewise, if you like what you're hearing, you want to talk more about it. I heard some people saying on Twitter that they feel like when we're talking on the podcast, we're having a conversation. They'll talk right back to me, which is so cool. But make sure to tweet me that stuff, because in your car, I can't hear you. Or you can record it, I guess, and send it to me on Voxer. Do that. On either of those platforms, I'm at mehan.edu. And I have a website. It's adrenalinerush.com, which is the name of my book, Adrenaline Rush. It's all about game-changing student engagement, inspired by theme parks, mud runs, and escape room. And that is adrenaline with an E. And that's the end of that story. So let's talk about clearing the lists and using the internet for good or for evil. If you've not seen it, a few weeks back on Twitter, it started innocuously enough where there were one or two or three teachers, I think they were based out of Texas, please feel free to fact check me on this, who took to the web, Twitter and Facebook, and put together an Amazon wish list, like a bridal registry, or like a wedding shower, or a baby shower. With a list of, man, if I could go back to the school year, here are all the things that I would love to have. And we know that the average classroom teacher spends a lot of money on his or her classroom. That is not a surprise. I think about the first year in my classroom, I kept track of it because you've probably seen the famous meme on the internet that says, like, government-funded classroom, and it's a bunch of rows and, like, you know, chalkboards. And then it says teacher-funded classroom, and it's, like, you know, brightly colored paper everywhere and hanging decorations and, you know, table signs for each student and, you know, of course, magic markers, scissors, constructed paper, all these sorts of things. And that's the truth of much of it, is schools are notoriously underfunded, or teaching is a profession that doesn't make a lot of money. Some months ago, I think back in December, there was a blogger or someone on Twitter who started a movement about, like, teacher worth. And each teacher posted, like, 5 points in response, like how long they've been teaching, what state they teach in, what their degree is, and what their salary is. Well, it's like some sort of things that are kind of attached to that, like the upshot of how long they've been there, or their, you know, financial benefits. And the average teacher salary is not great. It does vary wildly from place to place, from state to state, from town to town, even from school to school, and even within certain schools if they are private or unaffiliated. Because tenure systems are wonky, or it's just a matter of, like, you work for independent contractor rate at what you're able to command. In my school, for example, it is a private Catholic school, which makes it sound like it's a lot of money. And we do charge a tuition rate for students, but our tuition only operates at about 87% of our operating costs. So we charge X dollars, but there's a delta in there of about 13% for each student about what it actually costs to run the building. And the pay rate for teachers, where we are in Arlington, Virginia, and this is the story of many Catholic schools, is only about 83-85%, maybe it's up to 87% of what the public school teachers in the same positions make. So that's sort of a crazy thing when you think about it, that, you know, Catholic schools, right, charge money to work or to get there and then pay their teachers less. But that's maybe not a surprise, because they are non-profits or not-for-profit organizations, so they do operate at a loss, with the idea of they're offering a ton of financial aid to students and a ton of programs that are designed to get people in the building and to foster that social-emotional learning, to foster the stuff involving just the whole child, things that ASCD would talk about. And so it's wild when you think about it. Sometimes those who are working at the most elite schools, or the prestigious or hard-to-get-in schools, whatever you want to call it, are still the ones who are hurting the most for cash. And certainly, my original experience was working inside the Achievement Gap High Schools in Prince George's County, Maryland, which is just outside of Washington, D.C. And those are things like when you're dealing with students, free and reduced meals, Title I schools, and that's certainly issues with overcrowding, lack of resources. We had a paper shortage, like a actual printed piece of paper shortage. And I want to say it was like March or April of the second year I worked there. And at one point, the superintendent came through just to do like a routine, like meetings and checkups and everything like that. And as they walked in the building, a good teacher friend of mine, Rosa Panola, I'll never forget it. If you're Rosa, you're listening, hi. Rosa saw the superintendent and says, "Oh, thank God you're visiting. Or it's good to meet you. Are you here about the paper?" And the superintendent was like very flummoxed. He's like, "What are you talking about?" She's like, "Yeah, we don't have paper. We haven't had paper for 2 weeks." And of course, he was not there for that. But I'm sure that was something he did not like to hear. But there was, with like 3 months, 4 months left to go in the school year, there was no paper to make photocopies onto. And while that might not sound like a big deal in 2019, in 2010, it was. In 2011, it was a big deal. Because there was not like, "Oh, kids, just pull out your phones and we'll read this on the internet." Literally everything we had to do was paper-based. And so teachers had to get really creative about like projecting questions on the big boards and then having students write down their answers on blank sheets of paper or things like that. And I think while teaching with less has made me into a better teacher, it forced me to think differently. In that first school that I was at, I had to be very resourceful, very creative. I did clock it in my first year when I was working there, and I want to say I spent like close to $2,000 on my classroom, and that's on things like they had chart paper for the walls, but everything else was up to me. So if I ever had to make like wall hangings or printouts or colorful things to bring in, even things like string, scissors, highlighters, stamps, like so students would have stamps on charts on the daily, even stacks of paper because again we ran out. And that sounds crazy, but like you have a choice as an educator, and it's such an awful predicament. It's like a Sophie's Choice moment, but like you have a choice to either ask the school for this money that you know they don't have and take it away from the kids who need it directly for stuff like food, because a lot of students are on free and reduced meals, right? Or you go without. And that's awful because students need things to engage in a classroom. It doesn't have to be a Pinterest-worthy classroom every single minute of every single day. In fact, my general rule on decor is I'm going to go ahead and not decorate because I'm going to let the students be the ones who are offering things that we're going to be adding to the walls regularly. So it's like a living, breathing testament to the learning that we're doing in the classroom. But all that said, those supplies cost money. And so a lot of teachers have taken, this is a very long way to get back to the start of the story, teachers, I think they started in Texas, Amazon-style wish lists where they said, "Hey, if I could only make a few changes, I would love to have these things for my classroom." They started posting on social, on Twitter, on Facebook, on different blogs, on Pinterest. And the movement kind of took off. A bunch of different celebrities or philanthropists started, like fairy godmothers, coming through under the cover of Nightfall and clicking a few of the items on the list, and suddenly everyone was hashtag clear the list. It was a big old thing on Twitter, and it has been. And I imagine because it worked this year, I don't see it going away anytime soon, because the stories I'm telling now are like 10-year-old stories of teaching. They're still happening in my school today. I'm in a different school, but it's the same sort of scenario. I have to make a choice about, now I do a lot of things with toys and games and stuff like that. And this leads to the next point about the clear the list movement. Some of the things you see on these clear the lists are classroom essentials, like paper or glue or tape. And the other option, of course, is teachers could just ask their kids to buy those things and bring those in. And we know the challenges with that too, because for years teachers have not had enough supplies, so they ask the homeroom moms and dads to kind of, foot that bill. But then you're doing things like giving students extra credit or making a class assignment where they have to bring in a gallon of hand sanitizer. And that's not an academic pursuit, and that's not fair to charge students or their families money for a grade in your classroom. That's not how this is supposed to work. Paulo Freire talks about that at length in The Pedagogy of the Oppressed. He talks about the commodification or this transactional banking style of giving grades or awards for participation or compliance. He's like, that only further, distances this achievement gap. It doesn't ever empower. But I think the other problem we're looking at is that when teachers are turning to their Clear the Lists, some of the things that you're seeing are like classroom essentials. They need those things. And some are a little bit fluffier, maybe less immediately available as things that you might typically encounter in a classroom and say, yeah, that's the thing that that person absolutely needs. So like in my classroom, I use a lot of toys and games, right? I bought a game called 5-Minute Dungeon. I absolutely love it. It costs $19.95. I will take that game and use its cards and its play and its mechanics to inspire different classroom games, not just for my class, but for 5, 10, 15, 20 different teachers all through my building. I think $20 is well worth it. But if I put that on my list of, hey, can you buy it for me? It looks like a birthday gift rather than a teaching gift. I think that's been a big upshot of this. People are seeing things on those lists like essential oils or classroom games, and they're like, hey, that feels like a splurge, not an essential. But here's the thing. It's their list, and you don't have to support it. Like anybody else's Patreon or anybody else's Kickstarter or anybody else's GoFundMe, you can look at what's on that list and say, hey, I just don't think this is for me. Thanks so much. I wish you well, and move on from it. So I guess that's the third point I want to talk about very quickly on this Clear the List movement. There has been a little bit of pushback for people who are saying it's outrageous and how dare these people come, you know, hat in their hand asking for money. But here's the truth. There's no money. So it has to come from somewhere. For many years, teachers have gone into their own pockets, but now through the internet, we've created a culture where people can reach out and support. It sucks that we have to ask one another, and usually it's teachers from other places who end up footing the bill. I know that I've seen these lists, and it breaks my heart, especially when I get at mentioned in them, because it does feel like a little like greedy, right? A little bit of like, you know, gimme, like begging. But you can say no, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, hey, I wish you well. I'm happy to retweet you. But if I give to one, I'd have to give to everyone, and that could be your policy, and you can move forward on it. Or you can set out an amount and say, hey, look, I'm going to spend $100 and split it over four or five lists so each person gets $25 or whatever that looks like. Or if you want to, you can go crazy. I mean, if you have the money, God bless you. And I don't think that's a bad thing, and I don't like this idea on teacher. And I've seen a little bit of it this summer where people are, like, so quick that anything that is shared by anybody immediately becomes, like, the point of how dare they have so much nerve. It's like, if we presume best intentions, positive intentions, and, like, that's not just, like, a cliche, and I'm going to go a little long with this podcast, but screw it, it's my podcast, and you can feel free to tune out now. But, like, I presume positive intentions when people talk on the internet. I try to, until they tell me a reason otherwise. I've seen some really nasty people come out of the woodwork and do some really toxic stuff, and it's like they come out every day with their axes sharpened saying, who can I hit today? And that sucks. It sucks on both sides of the political spectrum. It sucks in our culture that's incredibly divided, that we don't listen with the intent to understand. And that's one of the first things I teach you as an instructional coach is always presume best intentions and listen with the intent to understand. If you're posting a list, I presume it's because you need it in your classroom or you think you need it in your classroom. And I, because I'm a functional adult, can look at your list and say, you know what? I can justify this. I don't think I can justify that. If I want to click a little bit more and learn about your story, maybe you work at a Title I school. Maybe, yeah, I feel like I should do more for that. Sure. But if you work at a private school, I see that too because they're working for people who are paying big bucks, but that doesn't mean they're getting paid big bucks. So I see both sides, certainly. Likewise, if you're in a Title I school, it doesn't mean that you're not married to somebody who might make a little bit more money than maybe you're a teacher who works at a private school who married another teacher who works at the same private school. And both of you are hurting for cash. So like, you don't know anybody's story. And I think it's so critical in an era where we can be, you know, flies on the wall in anybody's classroom thanks to Twitter, to like presume positive intent or like ask those questions. Because if we don't know those stories, absent the narrative, our brains start to make up the narrative. And then it's, oh, the rich getting richer and they're taking advantage of blah, 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 blah. And essential oils, like, look, maybe that person's trying to build a trauma-informed classroom. Maybe that person in their own life or own therapy is going through a thing where they found that essential oils really help them be centered. There's a lot of information about persons with personality disorder, persons with trauma and anxiety, the centering activities where they can find five things. I mean, the smell, touch, feel, taste, or smell, see, touch, taste, and hear. And like those centering things can really help them de-escalate when they're in like an anxiety spiral. So maybe essential oils work for that, man. I am in no position to judge those persons as a human. I can judge with my wallet and say, I don't want to support this thing, but I'm in no position to tell them they have no right to do that. And I think that's really important. So like, as far as your Clear the List movement goes, and it's a long one today, do it, man. Post it up there. If you can get people to clear it, God bless you. Don't be a jerk about it. Don't like beat them up for it again and again and again, but it doesn't hurt to ask. You never know. And it sucks that we're in a culture that this is where we are. but this is where we are, and I don't know any other ways to move it and change it. Save but keep asking your admins, and many teachers are doing that too, but that doesn't fit in 280 characters. So again, in a very long podcast today, it is an unfortunate reality that many teachers have to go hat in their hands, begging for money or into their own pockets. But the alternative is, if they can't do that or don't do that, then our students go without. And I am not seeing widespread like exploitation of people asking for things like plasma televisions for their classroom. I'm hearing rumors that people are saying things like that, but I haven't seen it firsthand. And even if people were doing it, I do think in good faith, they understand if they don't get the plasma TV and you buy them a few sticks of glue instead. That's it for this week. It's a very long one, but like I said, it's an important topic and it's sensitive to my heart because teaching is not about, we don't like it when we waste our time and when we waste our money. And this is one of those rare intersects that kind of is doing both of those things. So I hope this helps. Thanks again. If you like what you're hearing, feel free to message me on Twitter at MeehanEDU. And I'll be back with a shorter episode next week. Good thing we had long traffic today. Thanks again.